Proud Wiradjuri woman and distiller Claire Ryder is joining us on the sidelines of her Bush Alchemy presentation, one of the highlights of the 2026 National Science Week. The event explores the chemistry behind native aromatics, the ecological significance of key species, and the cultural knowledge that has shaped their use for thousands of years. Claire, first of all, thanks for joining us and welcome to NITV Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, tell us about On Country Distillery and your upcoming participation in National Science Week.
I manage On Country Craft Distillery. I'm also the distiller there. We're the only distillery in Australia that's 100% owned and managed by First Nations women. So I'm a Wiradjuri woman, but I'm living and working on Bindal Country, quite a distant way from home.
In far north Queensland, I believe.
Exactly, which is great most of the year, but I tell you what, with state of origin, it can get pretty stressful. But outside of that, it's beautiful, and the Bindal community have been absolutely beyond amazing.
Yeah, I can imagine state of origin, you're either blue or maroon, and choosing would be a very, very tough ask, especially, yeah, well, we won't go there. You're one of the most anticipated participants in the 2026 National Science Week, which is quite unusual to have a distiller, let alone a First Nations distiller in Science Week. But one thing that really most of the audience don't know is that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples have been observing, testing, and refining knowledge about native plants for thousands of years.
Absolutely. And what really excites me is that our people have such a strong history as scientists and as researchers. And some of the bush tucker that we eat goes through incredible preparation processes. You know, there are some that have to be cooked for a certain period of time and then placed in running water for X many days and then treated again before something goes from a toxic plant into a beautiful, delicious, edible food. The research that our elders have put into that is incredible, and we benefit from the knowledge of those who have come before us, because I tell you what, if I had to work all that out on my own, I'd definitely have killed myself by now. So I take my hat off to those who have come before us and the incredible work they've done that gives us this awesome foundation to work from.
And are there examples where modern science has confirmed what elders have always known?
Absolutely. And that's what I love. So our people have an oral history, and we've done lots of different, you know, sort of research traditionally into medicinal plants and what's going to help you when you're feeling unwell. And modern science has been able to come along and go, okay, well, let's look into this. So a well-known example is lemon myrtle. Our people have been using lemon myrtle for thousands and thousands of years. We use it for cleaning, and we also use it to make different teas. Now, for our people, when we're feeling unwell, we'll often make a lemon myrtle tea to drink if you've got a bit of a cold. Modern science has gone and examined it and found that lemon myrtle is a really powerful antiseptic. It serves as an antifungal. It's something that the modern science has shown, you know, we've always said it's good for cleaning, but they've actually been able to have a look at the chemicals and the way it interacts with different things and show, actually, yeah, you're right, this is good for cleaning. This is good for when you've got a cold, because it'll help your throat because of all of those properties. The beautiful thing about modern science is that it's able to explore things that we feel we've already known and help quantify it. And it helps explain things that we've observed and allows us to further our craft. One example that I love is that we have a plant called anise myrtle, and it's a gum leaf that smells and tastes exactly like licorice. Now, for us, we've always gone, it's licorice, it's delicious. But scientists have actually had a look at the chemical breakdown of it and found there's a chemical called anethole. Now, anethole is really exciting because it's found in licorice root, licorice leaf, star anise, and fennel, amongst other things. And that one chemical that also occurs in our beautiful anise myrtle is what's responsible for the licorice flavour. And what's so cool for us in distilling is that when you use other things that are rich in anethol, it tends to lead to alcohol going cloudy, which is why a lot of the sort of licorice flavored alcohols either use artificial things or they do a thing called blouching, where when you add ice or water, it goes sort of a milky color. But because of the way that our anise myrtle is made chemically,
yeah,
it doesn't do that. And so we're able to make these incredible natural licorice flavors that you can use for alcohol, you can use for cooking, you can use for all sorts of things. And from a chemical perspective, it's much more stable. You don't have the issues with louching. And so it's incredibly versatile.
I also saw that in the processes that you use in your distillery, one of the most fascinating things is that some of the native plants actually change completely once distilled. And even then, people experience them differently depending on their genetics. So what does that tell us about the science behind flavor and aroma?
There's so much to learn about it. So that sounds pretty wild when we say, oh, you know, it tastes different depending on who you are. But if we relate it to something that most people know about, think about coriander. For some people, coriander is this delicious herb. For other people, it tastes like soap and ruins everything it touches. We have this really awesome plant called native lemongrass. And for different people, it'll taste differently. You'll have one of three tasting experiences. Either you'll try it and you can have it in an alcohol, or you can have it in a tea, you can use it in cooking. It'll taste like dry lemon, a lot like your normal Western lemongrass does. So you'll get that sort of, you know, dry citrusy flavor. Other people will get a really strong rose flavor and it'll taste like a Turkish delight. And a third group of people taste both, so they get a mix of lemon and rose. And for us, that's really exciting because this sort of stuff, you know, it hasn't been well documented. And I'll be honest, when I first started playing with lemongrass, it was from some of my elders who picked it. And for them, they went, yeah, it just tastes like lemongrass. The native lemongrass tastes the same. When I started using it, when I made it into a tea, I thought I'd had a stroke or I'd accidentally poisoned myself. And they're going, the bag says lemongrass. I've double-checked with my aunties. They're all drinking it saying it tastes like lemon. I'm there tasting rose going, I don't know if I need to go to the hospital. Am I losing my mind? What's the go here? And so science is so amazing at explaining all of these unknowns. And it really helps to give us a much better perspective of what's going on. So I love that science provides this incredible roadmap. It helps confirm things that we've always known, and it helps explain new things as well. For me, science frames the magic of bush tucker, and it allows us to really make the most of our environment. And for a lot of people, bush tucker can be quite confronting. They don't know what's safe to eat, what's not safe to eat. And because of that, some people just go, well, I'm not going to touch bush tucker because I want to be safe. And that's fair enough. But if we can have the science that backs it up and goes, no, no, we promise you this is safe. And more than just being safe, here are the benefits of this incredible bush tucker. We can get people excited about it. Yeah. And when people care about bush tucker, they care about land management. So the way I explain it is that if people see a gum tree down at the local park, and it's got the big X painted on it in, you know, spray paint from the council, and they go, oh, well, that's another gum tree being cut down, they don't care. But if they know that their favourite booze is made from that gum tree and the council wants to cut it down, suddenly people actually care.
Yeah. Another aspect of your business and what you do is really driven by cultural knowledge and everything. Every native plant has its place in an ecosystem. How do you harvest botanicals in a way that respects country?
So we've got lots of different botanicals and some guide us in different ways. So at the moment we've been collecting native figs because we're making a delicious fig gin, and also for our science presentation, we're collecting bush tucker that we can present as not just alcohol, but also as food and fresh bush tucker. For the figs, it's nice and simple. We go down there and there must be figs rotting on the ground. We want to make sure that there's enough for seed propagation. We need to make sure that there's plenty for the animals and plenty for other people. So if there's plenty of fruit rotting on the ground, it means that we're not taking too much. There's still plenty to spare. But if you go down and there's no fruit rotting on the ground that week, you don't collect. It means you have to dial back what you take. But some plants are really clever and communicate with us. My favorite native plant is our native samphire. It is this gorgeous little succulent, and it grows down in mangrove areas and coastal areas. It's really useful because it's something that loves the salt, but it's also a bioindicator. So when everything is good, our native samphire is this beautiful, lush, dark green color, but she's also a total drama queen. So if it's too hot, if the salinity's off, if there's issues with pollution, she flushes bright red like a traffic light. And that for us is a warning that something's wrong. So if I'm going down harvesting or fishing or spending time on country down by the mangroves, down by the beach, the first thing I look for is the samphire. Now, because we live in North Queensland up here on Bindle and Walgurukabar country, some days it's just really hot. And so if it's red for one day, we go, okay, we'll come back tomorrow and check on it, but it might just be, you know, dodgy weather today. But if it's red for a few days, it means something's wrong. So for us, it's then our responsibility as custodians of the land to find out what's wrong. And because it gets redder the closer it is to the source of the problem, we get to play a game of hot and cold. So we'll trudge through the mangroves or along the beach and follow it, going towards where it's reddest. And often we'll find that, you know, someone's dumped something off the side of a boat, or there's been, you know, some issue where someone's, you know, dropped a jerry can and there's been some fuel or oil spill. So what we do then is we shovel up the tainted mud, put that in bags and buckets to take away, pick up the trash, the rubbish, all of that, do our best to clean up, go away, come back the next day. If she's green again, we've done a good job. We can high-five ourselves and we can then go fishing. If it's still red, it means, nah, you haven't done a good enough job. You have to keep cleaning until you can come back and she's green. And it's important that we listen to the environment and we respect bioindicators like that, because if we don't take care of the land, it won't take care of us.
That was the first part of our conversation with Claire Ryder, founder of the only distillery owned and operated entirely by First Nations women in Australia. Claire was sharing with us insights into raw bushtaka ingredients and how she blends traditional knowledge with modern science and innovative distilling techniques. In the second part of our conversation, we will discuss how her business model can inspire First Nations people, especially women, in STEM and economic participation.